Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, there's an old Chinese proverb that says, "May you live in interesting times." And there are many areas where this proverb is true today, but maybe nowhere more apt than in romantic relationships. The Me Too movement has been a really long time in coming, but it also adds an additional challenge to romance. And the changes to traditional male-female roles cannot be undone, nor should they be, but maybe there's some room for modification and clarification. So Soul Love mentor Joanna Schachty is going to help us take a closer look at what can actually help in navigating this dance of love. So Joanna, thank you so much for being on the show and talking about this. I mean, it's got to be everywhere. I mean, everybody has got to be like so confused now.
Yeah, oh, I'm really excited to be with you, Leslie, because it is. It's a huge conversation as a society, and then it drills down to our very personal relationships. And so, yes, it's everywhere.
Yes, and so you wrote a recent post called "Stop Expecting Women to Be Men." Me Too, what now? And I'd also do the flip side of stop expecting men to be women, but you may have already written that, and that's a whole other article. But you know, you take this issue head on. And before we get into all of the fundamentals in the article, something you talk about, which is a really important differentiation, is what is the difference between masculinity and femininity and masculine and feminine energy? Because I think that can be a source, one of the initial sources of confusion.
Absolutely. And I would love to make another distinction in there, and that is around gender and even orientation. Like, these all play together. So let's take your first piece of the question, masculinity and femininity versus masculine and feminine energy. And the way that I would look at that is that masculinity and femininity are actually the expressions or the embodiment of masculine and feminine energy. So what I mean by that is masculinity shows up in any of our bodies, male or female, and it is an energy, it's masculine energy that then results in what we've labeled masculinity. But to be really clear, that masculinity does not mean male.
Okay, and that is a really interesting concept, because I think that can be, and this may be confusing for men who are experiencing their feminine energy, and sometimes even for women who are experiencing their masculine energy. It's like, well, wait a minute, what's going on here? I'm a man, or I'm a woman, and I shouldn't be feeling this way.
Right.
Without understanding that we all have both.
We totally have both, and there's the idea of I shouldn't feel this way, or I have to be this way, because there's been this conditioning, because well before Me Too came to light, men were being conditioned to soften and be more sensitive, which in and of itself is great. The problem is when they soften and they get more sensitive at the expense of their authenticity and their own genuineness and their own truth. And the same thing with women and their feeling that I have to be masculine to be safe, successful, respected in the world. And so it's a have to, when a lot of women will go, well, if I didn't have to be that way, no, I'd much rather be softer. I'd love to have somebody contribute to me. I don't, really don't want to have to do it all. So it's a both and.
Yeah, that wonderful doing it. Yeah, that wonderful doing it all, and then we wonder why we're all so exhausted. It's like, stop. But
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's what is that old? I can't even remember what the commercial was for. You know,
perfume.
Bring it on the bacon and fry it up in a pan. You know, it's like, and. You know, and I know that this, I don't know, do we want to call it a dance? What exactly do we want to call it when, you know, it's going to be really hard in a relationship if both people are in their masculine energy or their feminine energy at the same time? It's almost kind of like, okay, I'm going to step into this energy, you know, and because it's they're complementary.
They are. They're complementary. They're opposite energies. And so I always, when I'm sharing this in my programs and with my clients, it's like magnets. And magnets have two opposite ends. They have a positive end and a negative end in terms of their charge. And so if you bring two positive ends to a magnet together, what happens?
It doesn't go very well.
Well, it doesn't go very well. And what's even funny, and I used to love to do this, is to play with the magnets and watch them, like, flip away from each other.
Right, like, they actually push each other away.
They do. They totally repel each other. Whereas if you now flip that magnet around and you bring the positive to the negative, they come together and they stick. And it actually takes some force to pull them apart. So this is what masculine and feminine energy do with each other. Now, here's going back to, let's make these distinctions. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if the masculine energy is in a male body or the masculine energy is in a female body. What tends to happen, and it doesn't matter if we're talking about heterosexual relationships or same-sex relationships, what tends to happen is that one person in the relationship will carry more, at least this is if there's chemistry, if there's spark, if there's polarity and sexual energy, one person will carry the more predominant masculine energy and one will carry the more predominant feminine energy. However, knowing that's true, we're not always embodying the authentic energy. So a man will go, well, yeah, if you want to take the lead, well, actually, let me back up some and say one other thing, again, being specific about these fundamentals.
Okay.
The majority of women actually do embody a predominant feminine energy, and the majority of men actually do embody a predominant masculine energy. In some cases, it's reversed. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, it's a more neutral energy, and there's very equal amounts of both. But those two secondary cases are actually a very small percentage of the population. And so for the moment, I will tend to say he, she when I say masculine, feminine. But it's the,
right.
What I'm really saying is whichever energy is authentically your predominant energy, that's the one that you want to embody. Because I was an electrical engineer by degree. Oil
yeah.
and gas, Houston, Texas, 90s. I'm a feminine being, very feminine being. But in those days, I would have sworn I was masculine. And I was driving, and I was outmanning the men, and I was proud of it. And I wore in the 90s, I wore the shoulder pads, and I held that role.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would wonder, why do I meet all the men that are so soft and sensitive and passive? When am I going to meet a man that will stand up to me?
Exactly.
Well, I was
not understanding
my opposite.
Exactly. Yeah, not understanding how all of this works. And so I think that, and I know that one of the things, another topic that's attached to the Me Too movement as well, is the whole concept of toxic masculinity, and that's a topic for another day. But again, it's this, you know, and again, that's in many cases, that's inauthentic because people think, well, I have to do this either because I'm a woman in a man's field, so I have to kind of outman the man.
Yep.
Or, you know, a man who really, that's not their natural, you know, that's not their natural inclination, but yet they have to develop this, you know, toxic masculinity to kind of fit in. And I'm thinking, you know, the prototypical locker room and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, I've got to be this tough, you know, pardon my language, badass kind of person. And if that's who you are, that's okay. But it's when it's not authentic to who you are that's when a lot of the problems show up, both internally and in whatever relationship you're in.
Absolutely. You are spot on.
So one of the things that your post was, you know, instigated by was an article that appeared in the Wall Street Journal. And so what was it about that article? Because when I read your post, it's like, oh, she's hot. About this. So it's like, what was it in that article that you just went, oh, yeah, I can't leave this alone?
Yeah, it was the headline actually that caught me first, and it was, I should have thought, but masculine dads raise confident daughters.
Okay.
And what caught my attention, and I was like, I mean, a part of me, and again, excuse my language, but part of me goes, damn it, because the thing is, what we have done over and over is set these expectations for how men are supposed to be and how women are supposed to be. And so this masculinity teaching, this is a probability, not a guarantee, that she's probably feminine. And she's being taught how to be confident by putting on this macho, I take no shit attitude. Instead of the truth of her own sensitivity, her own desire, her own, for femininity, her own desire to be able to be cherished. And that's actually something that gets challenged, not in the Wall Street Journal article, but there's a link to then a New York Times article inside that Wall Street Journal article that talks about the idea that chivalry is wrong and that cherishing a woman is wrong. And so none of this is, in my opinion, right or wrong in its essence. What is critically important, and this is what we were talking about a moment ago, is that we find out the truth of who we are, and we live to that truth. And so one of the things it's the daughter in this article that's writing about her father and praising him, which is, there's much of it that is really good. But one of the pieces in the article where she talks about, I was not allowed to have, I think she used the word unbridled emotion in my conversations. Tears were
option. That's an interesting adjective, unbridled. That's loaded with judgment, but okay.
And I may have it wrong, but it could have been unrestrained, but it was a word in that, like, you need to keep control of your emotions, and the implication was they're not really welcome here, and your tears sure as heck definitely aren't, because it's not how you have a logical conversation. And she didn't use the word logical, but I think it was rational. And, you know, whichever specific words, we've got this generalization here of, in order to be rational, and this is what a lot of the corporate world does to us, is tell women, you can't bring your emotion into this place. I mean, back in the day, it was like, if you cried at work, oh, my God. This is a massive problem, and that hasn't changed that much in the 15 years since I left the corporate world. I know it's a little more acceptable, but
But it's still also men are shut down. I mean, but then you get this whole thing, and maybe it's just because I'm a solopreneur and, you know, I have my own business, and it talks about finding your passion. Well, it's like, okay, wait a minute. Passion is an emotion word.
you know,
and great leaders inspire passion. So it's kind of like this really bizarre disconnect. And I do understand that men don't know what to do when the women in their lives dissolve into tears because, you know, again, they feel somewhat helpless, which there's a way around that. And the way around that is not to tell people not to cry. But it's to be able to sit and help with that emotion, because I don't know too many men. Now, maybe you have more information about this, but I don't know too many dads who tell their, you know, 6-month-old babies to quit crying. And I don't know how effective that, I mean, having had 6-month-old babies, it's like, it's not going to be very effective anyway. So
no, but there's a stage.
Exactly.
That, you know, there's the idea of manning up. And that's said to young boys. And there's a way that is totally wrong for young boys. And there's a way that it's wrong for young women. You know, and then it's not said to women, but if it's like, stop crying, there's nothing to cry about. Your feelings aren't legitimate. Get over it. Like,
my father used to say, if you don't stop crying, I'll give you something good to cry about. It's like, if I'm crying, I think I have a good reason, but okay, never mind.
But that's not our collective consciousness around emotions. Men and women alike, we are so conditioned to stuff our emotions. And, you know, not only is this man teaching his daughter, mm-hmm. right, don't feel, don't bring your emotions into this, i.e. be more rational and logical, but we're also reinforcing conditioning that is tough on men. Because men
exactly.
don't know how to feel either. And part of the solution to Me Too is for all of us to start feeling and getting real about okay. the impact that it's having. And men having the opportunity to feel their own, like, oh, I've had an impact on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I don't yep. like how that feels.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be shame. Or there may be guilt. And not that I wish those emotions on anybody, but they are transformative when we are willing, without beating ourselves up, to go, you know what? I'm not proud of what I did.
Right. And there is what is considered appropriate shame. If I mm-hmm. if I've done something that's hurt somebody, I should feel bad about it. I mean, that's an appropriate feeling, but not beating myself up and saying I'm the worst person in the world and I don't deserve to live. But this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with soul love mentor Joanna Shakti about the challenges of making love work in today's world. And if you find it challenging to understand your role in your relationship, I encourage you to get some clarity. I invite you to schedule your free, no obligation, Create Your Happily Ever After strategy session with me. You can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. Or you can call me and leave a message at area code 919-924-0463. And I don't want to take any more time because this is such an important topic and we don't have all day, although I wish we did. So you were talking, Joanne, a little bit ago about the idea of chivalry. And you also mentioned in the article that there's a challenge with the concept of what you call neutering or neutralizing. And you actually propose chivalry as a possible solution. So what is this concept of neutering? And I'm a big proponent of this, but why should we embrace chivalry?
Yeah. So let's take the neutering piece first,
mm-hmm.
because I was actually thinking about that earlier when I was talking about women and emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I talk about neutering, and really where it becomes most obvious to me in our world today is in a corporate environment. And it's as if we don't want to acknowledge that there's any difference between men and women. And my opinion is that we are different creatures. We have different needs. We communicate in different ways. We have different feelings. We have different access to our feelings. And
well, and as the parent of both a son and a daughter, I can tell you that from the moment of birth, there are differences.
Yeah. And you know, I think John Gray was onto something when he wrote his books 30 years ago or whatever it was.
You right.
know, and so, but what happens is, and there's what I will use, I'm not a fan of the word appropriate, but there's sometimes that it's appropriate. And
mm-hmm.
there are things that are appropriate in our corporate world and things that aren't. But the truth is, it's as if we're not allowed to have femininity or femaleness. We're not allowed to have masculinity or maleness in our corporate environment. And what we end up having to, like, try to homogenize everything. And it's got huge costs because there are some studies that are out that when teams actually grow in the amount of women that are on the teams, the effectiveness of the team goes up.
Or right, the whole diversity, the more diverse a team is, the more creative. I think there was a study about the more patents that the company owns or something. I mean, it was a really, like, hard and fast, there's not woo-woo
yeah.
any kind of stuff. It was very statistical.
Right. And, you know, and even, you know, what the composition is of the executive team, and that the mm-hmm. more feminine or female presence on those executive teams, in terms of market performance, again, there was higher performance relative to the percentages of women. And mm-hmm. But at the same time that those studies are out, it's don't show your emotions, don't be too assertive, come together, don't express your differences. And that's the neutering and the neutralizing that all of a sudden it's like, well, who am I? And we've got to know, because again, if we talk about spark, there's the sexual spark that comes from the differences, the polarity that we were talking about earlier, but that sexualness, well, the creative energy of inspiration and ideas. And so again, talking about the teams, it is actually that difference that can spark something absolutely new, the different perspectives. And so it's really, for me, I say that of like, stop neutering each other. Talk about how to respect our differences rather than try to annihilate our differences, which then annihilates actually our power to create and generate the best results and the best possibility and have actually the best friendships as well.
Well, and I do think it's a very, very interesting point. And I think the more either an individual, a company, whatever you want, you know, whatever the entity is to learning about really what works, and that we are, each individual is composed of masculine and feminine energy, and it's like anything else, it's on a continuum, you know, where we happen to fall. But it, we all have it, and we're not using it to our best, for best purposes, either personally or in the corporate world.
No, we're really not. And I actually go back to, years ago, I used to talk about it on a continuum. I actually mm-hmm. talk about it on two separate spectrums now. There's the masculinity
spectrum. Yeah, it probably
spectrum,
is, yes.
Mm-hmm. And the femininity spectrum, and that we can actually develop the capacity to go anywhere on those spectrums. And then, but there is a place, there's a neutral, like resting place that is our natural and authentic expression. And then given a situation, we can go anywhere we need to on those particular spectrums. And so again, it's about, you know, that bottom line of, I think what we've really been both saying through this whole conversation is, who am I really and how do I be that? And who are you really and how do I respect that? Respect for self, honor for self, respect for other, honor for mm-hmm. other. And really getting to know how we create more and better because of our differences.
What role does chivalry play in that process?
Yeah, so this is one of those where, again, the naturalness is really, when I look at chivalry, when it's genuinely offered, not because I should.
Uh-huh.
But when it's
or because I'm trying to get something.
Yeah. Or because I'm trying to, absolutely, or because I'm trying to play the right thing uh-huh. to get something.
Right.
That at that point, when it's genuinely offered and genuinely received, it actually feeds both people. Both people feel seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say she in this case, but it could be reversed as long as it's authentic. But
exactly.
It was so great to watch her receive that. I love giving that gift, and I feel fuller and more alive. Felt so good to be given too. It was so mm-hmm. nice to surrender and allow that generosity. And so there is, like, masculinity tends to have... masculinity has a generative giving energy. Femininity has a natural receptive energy. So if these are our energies, if we find them in whoever body we're mm-hmm. talking about, and we allow that, then the receptivity of my feminine being fills me, and I'm better in the world because of it. And the thing that I find so interesting, I love to say this to women, that so often we talk about strong, successful, powerful women and why uh-huh. they struggle in love. And so often it's because they've shut down their ability to receive, and they've relied on a judgment or a belief that femininity is weak or passive. And so if we look at the idea of chivalry and take the grocery bag that we might be carrying or the suitcase that we're lifting into the overhead compartment, and there are so many women that are conditioned that to say, I'll say that this way, the mantra of the modern day woman, when something is offered to them, they'll go, no, I've got it. No, I've got
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the
I can
mantra,
handle it.
I got it. I can handle it. And the mantra of the fulfilled, happy, in this case, feminine woman, thank you, as she receives. And so chivalry is an opportunity. Well, and there's a second piece to this, but first it's an opportunity for the masculine to offer its generosity and for femininity to expand the capacity to receive. And then the last piece that I'll say about chivalry is that it's actually a reflection. Chivalry in its origins was offered because she was treasured. She was honored. She was precious. And this is something that is incredibly missing when we look at the Me Too movement. What would relationship be like if we started to treasure the one that we're in relationship with? And chivalry happens to be an example of that.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, I mean, and things have gotten so off track because I think that there's a misunderstanding, like, in anything, of where the roles originally came from. And some of it was inappropriate or not respectful of both, but a lot of it actually was. But again, it's like anything else, we start seeing it through a particular lens and then we lose all the positive aspects of something and only focus on, you know, why it was restrictive. And so part of this is just going back to allowing these. And you talked about, you actually recommended, and you said this earlier in the conversation, but you also talk about it in the article, about that both men and women need to get real, in quotes, your quotes, in light of the Me Too movement. And so what would this look like? I mean, for me, I'm hearing that it's, and again, I will always tell this to people. I said, you need to be, you know, you're in the right relationship if the other person, like you're talking about, cherishes you, respects you, isn't trying to change you. They might want you to change a particular behavior, but they're not trying to change who you are as a person. And you should never feel like you have to give up who you are as a person, because if you ever have to do that in a relationship, run. But but what else? I mean, so I'm, you know, because we have, if we're not authentic, it's going to end, either because we've sold the other person a bill of goods, they think we're one way, and then 10 years later we stop being that way and they're really confused, or, you know, they're harping on us to be different than who we are, and it's like, first off, we don't have to, and second off, I'm not even sure it's possible. I mean, yes, we can change our behaviors, but we can't really change who we are, which I know is, people think that's a weird statement, but but for you, what would this look like? How do we help people get in touch with both of their energies? How do we help people understand that this is not only is this okay, but stopping it is actually harmful?
Yes, and you're speaking about chivalry and the energies right now.
Yes.
So stopping it is actually harmful because we're shutting down our authentic self, and all of a sudden we don't feel, and this is true for men and it's true for women, we don't feel that vitality, we don't feel the passion, we don't feel the energy of who we are because we've muted, we've neutered, we've tried to stuff down all these expressions. And so, yes, it is absolutely critical that we start this exploration both internally and then getting to know those that were around of, like, what is that authentic expression and how have you shut it down in yourself trying to do the right thing? And then the flip side that when I talk about getting real. So that's the first side of getting real, is like, who am I as a man? Who am I as a woman? What have I made wrong? What do I judge about masculinity? What do I judge about maleness? What do I judge about femininity? What do I judge about femaleness? And starting to give ourselves permission, because I can tell you, so many of the women that I work with, that they have this idea that if they start honoring the femininity, even though they go, yeah, it would be nice, but they'll think I'm weak. Or
exactly.
The flip side for the men is, well, if I start to honor my masculinity, even though I'd like to do that, they'll think I'm an asshole. Excuse my French. But it's that we stop because we don't want to be perceived wrong. So that's one side of getting real.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of getting real, which is, to me, the really touchy one around Me Too, is starting to have real conversations. And one of the things that she does really well in the article is she calls out women. And in the sense that her, one of her disappointments with the Me Too movement was that much of it doesn't invite women to look at, what is my part? How have I been complicit to this?
Right, which is a really dangerous place to go, because, you know, nobody deserves to be harassed or assaulted or whatever. But, yeah, this is, you know, I started out working in domestic violence work, and it's like, nobody ever deserves to be hit, but how does somebody get into that position? I mean, and somebody's going to say, well, I was just walking down the street. It's like, okay, I get that. I mean, I really do.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
This is a really tough place, because it's the one thing, and I know you mean this, and I'm sure she did in the article, it's not about blame.
No, that's a dangerous place to go as we're looking about how to change things. Blaming in a relationship, blaming in the societal question gets us nowhere. Staying in the conversation. It's like, so getting real is, one of the things is, you know, in the past, the options for women were stay silent or really man hate or man bash.
Right.
But neither one of those worked. So now, well, what's the alternative?
And you've just gone into one of my isms, and it's like, I don't like extremism of any kind. I call it, or fundamentalism of any kind. It's too simplistic. It's, you know, it's the 0-1, good, bad, right, wrong. It's like, almost everything is more complex than that. And a lot of times, you know, we're living the roles that we were taught, and to my cool thing is, whatever we were taught, if we were taught it, it means we can unlearn it and learn something else. So that to me is always a good thing. But it's the willingness to explore, you know, how am I contributing to this? What message am I sending, either intentionally or unintentionally? You know, and is that the message I want to be sending? And
It
just gets really complicated.
It does. And here's another piece of that, and I can own this. Where I consciously let men do things I didn't want them to do because I wanted love, because I wanted to be seen, because I didn't want them to leave. That's another side of this equation where I didn't value me enough.
Yeah, been there, done that.
Their attention was more important than my own truth. And it's another piece that plays in this entire conversation.
Exactly. And that's actually the hardest piece, you know, because I do couples work and I tell people, you got a built-in scapegoat. You can blame your partner all you want, but the place to start is to look in the mirror and say, what's my part in this? How am I contributing to this? And that's the place most of us don't want to go. And again, that's really, you know, the only place where we can do anything. We have to be willing to be open. And by the way, just because somebody says, you know, you're doing X, okay, you don't necessarily have to agree with them, but you might want to take a look and say, well, what is prompting their saying that I do X? You know?
Right.
And what I like open to that.
Yeah, well, and I was just going to say, as you're saying that, what I like to say then is the person that is saying, well, you're doing this, mm-hmm. is a different way to offer that is, can I tell you the impact that that has on me?
Exactly.
And so I bring it back to me, and all of a sudden, it's like they can go, oh, my God, I had no idea. That
exactly.
wasn't what I wanted. And that's one of the pieces that I say getting real as well. And it takes, which is seems like an oxymoron in this conversation, but it's going to take women actually getting vulnerable to say, this is the impact. Not I'm blaming you. Not you,
right.
you know, whatever we've said. But this is the impact that it has on me.
And
then hearing that over and over again.
And I think that, I mean, and that's one of the benefits of the Me Too movement, is that I think men are being able to see this from the woman's perspective and go, oh, that you're having a different experience of this, you know, than I do. That you know, because I mean, it's like I've said, you know, it's like most guys will just walk out of a building in the middle of the night and not think anything about it. If you're a woman
yep.
and you're smart, you think long and hard before you step foot outside that door. And
yep.
And you know, and when you say that to a man, they go, oh, well, yeah, that makes sense. But until you say that to them, it's like, well, what, you know, why aren't you willing to meet me? It's like, okay, do you understand? And again, this goes back to something that I will stand on my soapbox, top of the mountain, whatever, and talk about. It's the way in which we present things that will either invite people to hear them. And by the way, not everybody, because it's we all have to kind of hear things sometimes repetitively before it's like, oh, it clicks.
Totally.
But. And sometimes we need to hear it from a different person before it clicks. But we want to invite them into the conversation as opposed to getting them on the defensive,
exactly.
which we're never going to get anywhere if we by accusing not individual people of misbehavior, but in accusing a group of people
yes.
of misbehavior.
You're so spot on.
You know, so it's like yeah. the not all men. And, oh, God, Joanna, we could keep talking about this forever because I think it's really important. But, unfortunately, got to wrap it up. So can you please tell people, one, where they can you know, where they can find out more about you, about they can read this article, which I think is just wonderful, and really start their own personal journey.
Yeah, absolutely. My website is ecstaticintimacy.com.
Oh, I
and
love that.
Yes, ecstatic intimacy, the juice and the joy of life. So ecstaticintimacy.com, and then you'll find tons of information for men, for women. And in my blog, if you go to my blog page, you will find the link to this article. There are also several different gifts for men. There are several different gifts for women. So however you want to start this journey, there are opportunities to go deeper. And if you want to reach out to me directly, you can call me at 303-956-2796 and we can start that conversation.
Well, and terrific, because as I said before, the old rules of relationships may no longer apply, but the new ones aren't really clear yet. So it truly isn't necessary to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and it also isn't necessary to abandon the masculine and the feminine. And quite frankly, it's not even possible to abandon them. So the answer, as always, is clarity, understanding what you're doing and why. Paying attention to its impact both on you and your partner is the productive way to go. And love and relationships are still possible even in the days of, you know, Me Too, if you're willing to learn what's possible. So hopefully one of those ways you're willing to learn is to keep listening to the show. And until next week, stay loving.